coming to you from the basement in the forgotten borough of Staten Island, New York. This is the Wrestling Guys Podcast. This is the fans' perspective on all things of the WWE and the world of professional wrestling. We're your hosts. I'm Eric, otherwise known as Fizz. With me, as always, my tag team partner, Chris.
Never miss. You bring back Never Miss.
We're a little bit delayed. We're all healed up. We're all good. We all tested negative around here. We're going to get the clink to seal the deal, the virtual clink, because we're keeping it safe. Not trying to spread no diseases around or viruses. I mean, I'd say diseases. I do want to say before we start, we were going to drop this episode 2 weeks ago. Unfortunately, I had tested positive for COVID. No symptoms, though, which is fantastic, thankfully. Right? Knock on wood over there. And, you know, so took some time off, had to take care of the family. I literally had to disinfect my whole house. I did it 2 times. If I can never clean again, that'd be great, but you know, you have to. Needless to say, I'm always one that always mask up, is constantly washing my hands, still got it. So, you know, be safe out there. If that's a warning to everybody, I thankfully didn't get sick that required any type of hospitalization or any type of long term effects, which is good. But you know, people gotta stay safe. Vaccine is out. Hopefully we can get back to some type of normalcy sooner rather than later. But now we're here. War Games came and went. NXT was a very good event. And we were like, you know, let's keep the schedule going. Watch a couple of old school War Games matches, right? We're going 95, 96 back to back.
Yeah, we figured we'd do one bad one and then one good one. So I don't know if 95 is the worst one. I think maybe 98 is the worst one. I definitely wanted to revisit 95 and watch the Dungeon of Doom and talk a little bit about them. 96, we have the whole NWO versus WCW, which is, you know, a historic one. So those are the two that we're gonna go back and watch.
Definitely. I gotta say, I loved WCW. I mean, not as much as I loved WWE, but when the purchase happened initially, and they started bringing in, like, you know, contracts and stuff, and then they started introducing like the Great American Bash and all this other stuff. There was two things I always wanted for them to bring over. One of them was Halloween Havoc, which they just now brought back. But I always loved the concept of the pay-per-view Halloween Havoc around October. I love the setting.
Spin the wheel, make the deal.
Right. Spin the wheel, make the deal was awesome. And the fact that Eric Bischoff considered it his version of WrestleMania, not Starrcade, which everyone else thought was their version of WrestleMania. And he always felt like the Halloween Havoc pay-per-view was like their almost like their blow-off, their big blow-off event of the year, because alongside of a WrestleMania. That's one.
Just to touch on that real quick. I mean, obviously Eric Bischoff knows because he ran the company, but doesn't that just seem weird? In October, to have that be like the major pay-per-view event?
Well, I would say prior to his regime, Starrcade was viewed as their event, their big event of the year. I keep saying WrestleMania, but that's what you compare it to because WrestleMania is the biggest event of the year, right? So WrestleMania was there. Starrcade was them. But when he took over, and if you listen to his podcast enough, the 83 weeks or whatever, he always says Halloween Havoc for him was their he considered it their biggest event of the year. And he would have their major blow off to feuds and all stuff like that. I always loved it personally because when one of my favorite matches is Cactus Jack and Vader in 93, Texas Deathmatch, Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal. It's a fantastic match.
Great match, yeah.
Concept. I mean, you know, you have that one that's really good, but then you have like the Coal Miner's Glove match, which is crap with Jake Robinson's thing, right? So, I mean, but the concept of Halloween Havoc, especially when Bischoff took over, because like he brought in the big sets, that monster, like demon
look. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The set, and they had like the graveyard. Then you had like really great matches, man. You had like, Goldberg probably had one of his best matches at a Halloween Havoc.
98, yeah.
That was one. Two, and my main one was I wanted War Games in WWE. War Games was the number one. Like, what do you want from WCW? And it wouldn't be a wrestler. I'd say I want War Games. And when we first started this podcast way back when, we would talk about like what are some dream matches you want to come over, and mine was always War Games. To me, the two rings, the giant cage is fantastic. I thought it was a great idea. And the fact that they had the Hell in a Cell, which in itself is a scaled down version of a War Games match. I just hated that it took so long to come. It's there now. And NXT, I think, is doing a phenomenal job with it. But man, I thought it sooner rather than later. I really wanted to see it like almost instantaneously, and with the amount of talent they had, and granted, like the WCW contracts that came over, a lot of them weren't great. We didn't have the big stars yet. The Goldbergs and the Stings and the Mysterios didn't come over right away. But with the WWE invasion, what a better blow off than a War Games match? You know, I don't know. If you could rebook that whole scenario, that would have been my blow off match as opposed to Survivor Series. But I digress.
Well, I think we would all love to rebook the whole invasion angle.
That'd be an episode for a later day, right?
Yeah,
there.
Seriously. But yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement with you. War Games is one of the highlights and bright spots of WCW's history. You know, we all miss WCW. I know I do. And War Games was always, it was like their, to me at least, it was like their Royal Rumble. Like every year, Royal Rumble was my favorite event. But for WCW, every year it was War Games. Until you know, it just kind of went away. And yeah, that was one of the things that I was hoping that they would bring back. WWE, meaning when they bought them out, was War Games. And for whatever reason, it took them up until, what, 4 years ago for Triple H to bring it back on and have NXT do it, which is awesome and it's great, and they've had great War Games matches. It's also a little disappointing that it's not used on the main roster. I'm hoping that one day they'll get there.
But in a way, I kind of hope they don't. I like the fact that for some reason NXT is bringing back. They brought back Halloween Havoc as a special. They have War Games, and now they're doing New Evil, which is essentially scrapped pay per view that Bischoff wanted to do in 1999, going into 2000 with NBC. That got scrapped. And the fact that they're bringing back all these ideas, I don't think there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's great because we're revisiting history. We're bringing all this stuff back. We're revamping for the new generation. You know, who doesn't know what Halloween Havoc is? I don't know. You're going to put hot ass Shotzi Blackheart in a skin tight suit. You're going to have her do Spin the Wheel, Make the Deal, which she's one of my favorites, by the way. But
no complaints there about what she was wearing.
But you're going to have her introduce this stuff. You introduce the concept. You don't get into the history. You just bring that name back. And the old school fans who know what it is, great. And the new school fans, oh, damn, they had this thing called Halloween Havoc. That's awesome. You know, there's so many good ideas they could bring over. I think this is just me speculating. I have no idea whatsoever. But what is the reason why they never bring War Games back initially? It was because, and I know, I think it's been said before in other podcasts that they didn't want to give up the seating in the front to do the two rings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, I mean, the other reason why it's like maybe the mentality is, well, why are you going to bring back a gimmick match from a company that's out of business now?
Exactly. I was just going to say, I think it's probably, and this is obviously from somebody who is not a part of the WWE in any way, but I think it's just Vince McMahon not wanting to do anything that WCW did.
Right. Exactly. You know, it's like, you know, but, you know, and then the first thing that they bring back, I think, was the Great American Bash, which I find weird. But I mean,
and that, I think that was more of a tribute to Dusty Rhodes, which isn't War Games his creation as well?
Yeah, War Games was created by Dusty along with you know, several things. But it was initially a part of the Great American Bash was conceived as a tour where it was
all War Games matches.
Four Horsemen with Dusty Rhodes, the Road Warriors, and I believe Nikita Koloff, if I'm mistaken. Yeah.
No, you're right.
And they literally went around and toured, and they did these War Games matches like every other night. I mean, that's crazy what they were doing to each other, you know. And then, you know, they referred to it as the Match Beyond and all this other stuff. And it started out literally as a touring match. It wasn't even a pay-per-view yet. To me, that's insane to put yourself through that night in and night out. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, but think about this: is how funny is it that Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, let's say, right, inspired War Games. And then, you know, I figured WWE now uses the term Thunderdome, right? I mean, it's crazy. But in 87, the Great American Bash tour, so they called the War Games the Match Beyond. It was at three house shows later that year also, in addition to what happened over the summer. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, these guys, what they put their bodies through. I mean, you're talking – you know, I look at Pat McAfee and the insane crap that he did in the War Games match. Imagine doing that like every other night for a tour. Yeah. You know, that's and it was on house shows too. No less.
Especially at a time where, you know, they were using blood and you know, cutting themselves over and over again for those matches.
He was blading every night, and I mean, that's insane. Good for those guys. I mean, seriously. But if not, we're here. If you're following along, so we're doing a little bit of a watch-along action, right? You got your WWE Network on. You're going to go to WCW pay-per-views. You're going to look up Fall Brawl 1995. We're going to go to 2 hours, 10 minutes, 53 seconds, or because the network is great and they actually updated, you can actually go to the War Games match on those bottom tabs, right? I have it up here. Chris, you let me know when you're ready to go.
I'm ready.
All right. We're going to count it down. We're going to go 3, 2, 1. We're going to play it, and the match beyond is about to start. We have a whole pomp and circumstance. We got the WCW logo floating on the ceiling. Got a bunch of different neon colors shining bright.
Look at the size of that thing.
I wonder what it takes. I mean, they're there hours beforehand, but like, is there ever any fear that cage is just going to fall apart?
I was just thinking that, and I always think that whenever, like, we watch Elimination Chamber or any type of like gimmick match like this where they raise it above the ring, I'm just like, what if that thing falls?
Yeah.
That is just like disaster written all over it.
I like the way NXT did it this past War Games, where each panel of the cage actually was on its own independent, like almost like suspension, and kind of just came down on its own, and then they secured it together. That seems just to be the safest bet. Whereas this one, it looks like there's just like 4 ropes on each corner and they're just hoping for the best.
Yeah, that and WCW definitely seemed like looking at this cage now, it doesn't look like the best handiwork. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, absolutely.
Like, it looks a little shoddy.
Here's a question to start it off. Do you like the roof on the cage or do you like the no roof?
I do like the roof. I think it adds to the you can't escape factor. Like, there's nowhere to go.
Right. So here are the official rules for this War Games match. 7 periods in War Games. First period lasts 5 minutes. All the periods last 2 minutes. One man from each team enters during the first period. After the first period ends, the head referee flips a coin, and then that winner team goes next. And then after second period ends, the other team sends in its second man, making War Games 2-on-2. And then third period, so on and so forth. The coin toss. All right, so we get ahead of ourselves. I don't like the roof on the cage because I think it makes it very limited. And before we watched or started this match in preparation 2 weeks ago, I watched the War Games match where Sid almost killed Brian Pillman because he missed such a high caliber and he dropped down and dropped Pillman on his neck. And I think that's the problem with it. Whereas too, Brian Pillman was kind of innovative when he would grab the roof of the cage to like do some flying moves and stuff. I think having the roof off and making that rule where it's like if you escape, your team automatically loses, which is great because then you prevent the escape. But then it also helps with setting up like Ricochet a few years ago with those flying moves. Chandler Cole with the move they did last year. Stuff like that. Even when in the first War Games match where Adam Cole was kind of crawling across the top of the cage and they were trying, almost like, oh, if he falls over, Undisputed Era is disqualified. I think it adds more of an element. And here comes Zodiac. Terrible. My God. What a terrible gimmick that the Dungeon of Doom was. So he couldn't. Yeah, he just couldn't do it. He couldn't be Brutus the Barber Beefcake from the W. He couldn't bring the name from WCW. So then he was Brother Brudai, right? The Butcher.
The Butcher.
The man named the Booty Man. Zodiac, who wore black and white zebra stripes and said yes, no, yes, no, yes, no. And Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan. Another terrible gimmick. The whole Dungeon of Doom. Is the Dungeon of Doom one of the worst stables of all time?
I was just going to ask, is the Dungeon of Doom the worst gimmick ever? It is, but it's also so fun because of how cheesy it was.
I mean, Ugandan Giant Kamala, you have Haku here. Rest in peace to Clint for that guy. How you doing?
And then Shark.
And in the biz, Earthquake, who I... So underrated in WWE, is now Shark. When he first came in, he was Avalanche. I'm guessing that shark teeth with blood dripping down that are on his cheeks, which makes no sense to me.
And then yellow.
Yeah.
And Kamala, Kamala, I mean, I think most of us who remember Kamala are going to remember like this kind of goofy gimmick character. But if you visit his stuff from the 80s, he was actually like a top heel, menacing heel for the territories.
Badass. And then Jerry Lawler came up with the concept in Memphis, the Ugandan Giant, all that. But, unfortunately, when by the time, you know, most, I guess our generation remember him from, you know, the run in WWE and the little run he had with Undertaker and coming out with Kimchi and stuff like that. But in reality, he was a badass when he first started. Apparently one of the nicest guys you can meet also. You know, but that's the thing too. I think the gimmick, you know, because when WWE was very much into the cartoon character gimmicks of the 90s, it carried over into WCW. They couldn't take him seriously anymore.
Yeah.
Macho Man Randy Savage. Another one gone too soon. I do love themes in War Games matches. I love the fact that Hulk Hogan's team has the army fatigues on. They have camo. Pretty cool. They have the camo face paint. That's one of the best things. I like the unity. I liked it when Pete Dunne and the War Raiders and Ricochet did the little face paint in unison a couple years ago. I thought they did a great job when he did that. Sting coming out. Sting probably looks like $1 million here.
Sting, yeah, one of my favorites of all time, Sting.
He's the guy, dude.
On AEW now.
Unbelievable, right? Is he going to wrestle? That's the thing. It looks like him and Darby Allin and Cody might be setting something up. And there's Lex Luger, the total package.
And it's a shame what's happened to Lex Luger. I mean, I think wrestling fans have been very critical about Lex Luger. There's a lot of stories out there about him, and people can believe what they want to believe. But it's a shame what's happened to him now, confined to a wheelchair, and like he's lost all his body mass.
It seems like he's turned it around, though. I think he's born again, and he's doing a lot of work, speaking out on, you know, drug use and stuff like that. So it seems like he's turned the new leaf. Unfortunately, he had to get to that point. That sucks, man, honestly. But I do like this Icons thing that's coming up on WWE Network, that they're going to be covering him in addition to some other people, Lex, Yoko, Zuna, British Bulldog, I think Beth Phoenix as well. Yeah, looking forward to that. They did a little preview actually after TLC this past Sunday, and really looking forward to it.
Look at Jimmy Hart.
Jimmy Hart looks like a total cornball. He has fatigue on too. He's skinny as fuck. He has the rips like Hogan, and then he has these hot pants on. You're not getting in the ring. Like, just stop. Look at me. It's like red, white, and striped leotard pants.
Where do you put Jimmy Hart though on all time managers list? He's got to be top five.
I think he's up there. Yeah, he's up there for sure, without a doubt. I like heel Jimmy Hart better than when he was with Hogan. I do like him heel in WWE. Except the run with when he turned on Hogan and went to the Dungeon of Doom. Then it was just like, yuck.
Yeah. And we won't, for those who haven't seen this match and are watching along with us, we won't spoil it, but there's a big debut at the end of this match.
All right. And another one, too. Lex Luger was actually a replacement for Vader.
So
Vader was going to go face here, join Hulk Hogan's team. But about a week before the event, he left. And that's when he signed with WWE. So right before, I think, the previous Nitro before the pay-per-view, they announced Lex Luger as part of the team. And we have Sting and Shark starting off the match. Poor John Tenta, another one who we lost.
And another one who they say was just a super nice guy, too. Bruce Pritchard has talked about him before.
Here's the thing. The whole Dungeon of Doom team could have just been Haku. And then we just could have called it a day. Would have been Haku before them.
The stories about Haku and like his bar fights are insane to listen to.
I also, you know, I know if you ask anybody and you hear any interview with any other wrestler, they say the toughest guy in the business is Haku. And they talk about the time where he supposedly ripped a guy's nose off or something in a bar fight. How much of that is actually true and how much of that is actually embellished? But I mean, when you hear it from everybody, you know how urban legends gather steam over time.
I think it's definitely true that he was like just somebody that nobody wanted to mess with.
Right.
And he's still going too. Isn't he still working in New Japan? Because he's teaming up with the Gorillas of Destiny and the Bullet Club. Because those are
you're actually right. Yeah, I had to think about that for a second. But yeah, I saw him team up with. I actually saw them on an Access TV special where he teamed up with G.O.D. I don't know if he's still, I think it's all strictly a part-time basis, though. I don't think he's right. Full-time anymore.
Those things, agility right there.
So the point of this match, right, Hulk Hogan was in a big feud with the Dungeon of Doom. This was kind of the blow-off, and I believe if Hulk Hogan's team wins, he gets 5 minutes with the Taskmaster, Kevin Sullivan.
Sting slammed in the shot.
Sting was always a beast, though. Oh, missed on the second one. Sting was the, like, when I think of WCW, it's always Sting, right? I mean, he's the guy. He's the, you know, he's the franchise for a reason, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, he had the build, and he could go, man. He was a great wrestler. So now here's the problem that I have with the roof, right? John Tenta is like a foot away from just, you know, well, in that camera angle anyway, it looks like he could just jump up and just touch the cage with his head, you know? Looks like Sting really. And grab it, you know? And I feel like it limits people's moveset, especially, like, at least, like I said, the Brian Pillman, right? He kind of made it, innovated a little bit, grabbing the roof, doing some stuff with it. But, like, if you're a guy who, let's say, like Sting, who likes to come off the top, like, Sting is literally grabbing the top of the cage now in a bear hug. I mean, like, that's like... To me, it just doesn't work.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I see what you're saying, yeah.
Sting used to like to come off the top rope from time to time. And if he can't get any air off the top rope, you literally have to maybe crouch down on the top and kind of just do... It won't have enough impact or oomph coming off the top rope in a War Games match with having that roof there. I mean, I don't know. Add no holds barred PC. Do you agree or disagree? Roof on the War Games cage or no roof on the War Games cage? That's what I want to hear. Maybe we'll do a little poll. Oh, look, I think that's a tiger. Am I wrong there? That might be actually a... I think in WWE, it used to be a tiger. And maybe he had it modified or covered up over the years. Whoa. First of all, the fact that he got over the rope and rested himself on the second rope, John Tenta, that was impressive.
That was impressive, yeah.
I gotta say that was impressive. I was just going to say, though, I don't see an Earthquake with pants on with his singlet. No, I'm not feeling, not liking it.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me. He was Avalanche. I like that name better. They should have just kept him as Avalanche instead of
Right, but I think it was the fact that, like, you're literally ripping off WWE, Avalanche, Earthquake. I mean, you know, like when they had Big Boss Man come back as the boss and they had to, you know, legal had to step in and say, no, you had to change his name. And then they went with the Guardian Angel. Then back to Big Bubba Rogers. You know, it's like we do miss prior to this match, though, the great, very great Arn Anderson Ric Flair match.
Yeah, that was a great match.
It was all from Ric Flair interference from Brian Pillman in there, man. Another one we lost. Rest in peace. Damn, man. This is crazy.
Yeah, a lot of the guys we grew up with are gone.
I'll tell you right now, if I'm counting it up right here, if I'm looking at the match card correctly, out of the 10 matches, you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 people that are no longer with us out of that entire card.
That's crazy.
Big Bubba Rogers, Eddie Guerrero, Brian Pillman, The Renegade, Kamala, and John Tenta, The Shark. That's 8. I actually was counting. That's terrible. Now here comes Zodiac. Everyone hide. You know what's so about Zodiac? He wears the black and white zebra stripes. Oh, look, there's Sting. See, look, he grabbed the roof of the cage and then jumps up and kicks him. It looks like the roof of the cage is going to collapse as he's pulling down on it, literally. This is what this is about.
Yeah.
Getting back to Zodiac, the fact that he has two of his, like the ass of his pants cut out into circles and there's like a mesh underneath, giving you the element that he's still Bruce the Barber Beefcake, but yet he's some menacing Zodiac, makes no sense to me. The name makes no sense. The color scheme makes no sense.
The gimmick makes no sense. Yeah. Nothing about this gimmick makes sense.
Who the hell? I mean, I know it's like probably Kevin Sullivan's brainchild, right? But it's like, dude, we're going to call you Zodiac. You know what? Not for nothing. Zodiac, pretty badass name. But here, black and white zebra stripes. You're going to wear makeup, and you're going to cut out the ash cheeks of your pants and put mesh there so you still look like Bruce the Barber Beefcake. It's amazing.
Where does Brutus the Barber, not Zodiac, but Brutus the Barber rank?
Like, in what, all time?
Well, I mean, he's not going to make anybody's top 10 list, but do you think that he was over in the 80s and early 90s?
in terms of 80s gimmicks, I agree. He's probably one of the most popular he was over at the time, but it didn't translate well as they got into the 90s, and he could never take that next step. He could never alter his character. He was always, every time he looked at him, he was Brutus the Barber Beefcake, who dressed like a male stripper. And why are the Dungeon of Doom up on the cage like this the whole time? So, he dressed like a male stripper. They couldn't use the Beefcake name, so it was Brother Brudai. And they, you know, creative also didn't help him out either with the gimmicks that they gave him, the man with no name, the booty man. Then he was the disciple, and that's another one. They had, okay, so here's the thing about that. He comes in, he's dressed like a biker, he's ripped to shreds, he has his blonde long hair, calls himself the disciple. His move is essentially the Stone Cold Stunner, and calls it the Apocalypse, right? Mm-hmm. There's a stable in WWE named the Disciples of Apocalypse that dress like bikers with leather vests on. Like, who comes up with this creative? Dude, we're going to have one of you, right? Oh, Macho Man. Anybody greater than Macho Man. I hear you want to talk about one of the all-time greats. There you go right there.
Absolutely. WCW clearly did not have a good creative. Whole Disciple thing, but...
Right. If you listen to these interviews after the fact on where they came up with, like, who was the brain trust? I mean, I know people say Kevin Sullivan had a very good creative mind. He just wasn't a good finish guy. But then when you see shit like the Dungeon of Doom, it's like, what? Who kept giving him jobs?
Has Eric Bischoff ever – I don't listen to his podcast a whole lot. Has he ever talked about the Dungeon of Doom?
Oh, yeah. They talk about it all the time. Yeah, he wasn't a fan of the Dungeon of Doom at all. And if you think about it, too, like it's just hokey shit. And you know what bothers me? You have – Kevin Sullivan's supposed to be the leader, right? He's the taskmaster, but he has this heavy Boston accent that doesn't fit with the gimmick, you know? And that's where you have to realize, okay, this doesn't work. Okay, I have this menacing thing. Maybe give the gimmick to somebody else that might work, you know? Anybody who's really, you know, creative or a creative mind knows when stuff is working and when stuff could work for somebody else. You know, especially when like they used to have the father that gave him Kamala, and he goes, "Thank you, father."
Oh, yeah.
Father. It's like, that doesn't work, dude. And here's another problem. The cage is not flush with the ring, so essentially the dungeon is beneath and grabbing Macho Man's leg and almost pulling him out of the cage or back out of the cage. And here's Nick Patrick waving no-no with his finger, wagging his finger at Kamala. And now Kamala's running after him. So essentially they're interfering on the outside. Dude, I'm gonna keep going back to the roof. I don't give a shit. Look, it's U shape on the top. It looks like if decided to go on the top, it would have caved in. They would have had a Mick Foley situation.
Except this one is a lot lower, so it wouldn't have been as bad as the Mick Foley one.
Yeah, he wouldn't be having, you know, teeth hanging out his nose or whatever. But still, regardless, now Kamala's in the ring.
So now, as we see in this match, all the guys are outside and. Actually, I think this was the last time War Games match that the wrestlers stood outside and then went in when their time was up. In 96, they came out from the dressing room. Right. The NXT versions, they're in the locked cages and the cages get open. Do you have a preference as to how that works?
Twofold. I do like the team standing outside waiting to go in. Right, because then you have like it's almost like, you know, when you're up at bat and you have your teammates in the dugout like cheering you on, like, yeah, you got this, and they're waiting to get up at bat too, right? Like they're next. It adds some suspense to it. When I think the reason why 96 worked so much with having them come out one at a time from the back is because the whole sting angle,
yeah, absolutely.
So if you had the fake Sting standing outside with the two teams the whole time, people would immediately catch on after a while that's not really Sting. Whereas he came from the back, he fights really, really quick. You know, they did really good shots of hiding his face, and we'll talk about it after. But I think that's why it worked in that case. I do like the shark cages now, though, being at the top of the ramp. You know, both teams are talking crap to each other, and then they just let him out one at a time. It fits, and especially when they incorporate the cage. Remember that one year when they, like, when Dakota Kai turned on Tegan Nox, and then you had Pete Dunne had, like, that knee injury, and they, like, messed with him through the cage, and then they locked the cage so he couldn't get out with a different lock. You know, like, incorporating it, too, it really works. I do like the element of standing outside, though, with the team.
Got about another 12 seconds until...
And Kamala already looks like he's blown up. Kamala, he's gasping for air. Here comes the total package, Lex Luger. And not the greatest worker in the ring. Had the look, had the physique, but I always loved the Lex Luger sell when he yelled out like, "Ah!"
Yeah, that's, I was just thinking that. Now, there's a lot of things that have been said about Luger, and I think one of them is that Luger made a career off of potential.
Absolutely. Look, see, all right, here. Macho Man just went to the top rope. He literally had to crouch down a little bit, duck his head from hitting in the cage, and instead of jumping off with the axe handle, he stepped off the top with the axe handle. Oh, it's like, oh, you stepped off the axe handle. Great top rope move. That's where the cage being having the roof. Now, Sting currently is on the top rope as well. Look, he was crouching down. He got no air whatsoever, and he threw like a – he threw a slap at Kamala to his chest. That was not good.
It was enough to knock Kamala down.
I know. Kamala's on the floor. A great flat back bump off of it. And he's currently choked out in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, I mean, it does. Watching it now, again, it does take away from it. I think they just needed to make it taller, which I think they did for the next one, right?
That's what I agree with. I agree with you on that, right? If you're going to have the roof, at least make the cage a little bit higher so these guys aren't hitting their head every time they go to lift somebody up, right? I do like the concept of they're locked in, right? No escape. The only way you can get out is by submission or quitting, right? I do like – and I also like the concept of the no pinfall. I mean, I know – oh, see, Lex Luger just hit Macho Man in the back of the head with a clothesline, and now they're fighting. Sting's trying to break it up. Let's get some audio here. Hold on. And why would the ringside person ring the bell to break them up? There's a War Games match going on.
A lot of weird things going on in WCW. But this was the start of Lex Luger's heel turn and even him joining the Dungeon of Doom for a little while.
Yeah, and then he ended up joining the Alliance to End Hulk Hogan. And now Ming is cleaning house after Luger and Macho Man are like...
And there's those famous Luger bumps.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh! Now, I think it was, what was I listening to? I think I was listening to something with JBL. I think it was JBL. And they were talking about how one time WWF and WCW kind of crossed paths. And I think they were waiting. They were like calling each other out in a fight. And JBL said that the one fight that everyone was looking forward to was Haku versus Ken Shamrock. Like, can you imagine if those guys would have locked up?
It would have been like Doomsday and Superman. It would have destroyed the city around them and then both collapsed and died. Just two psychopaths.
What I don't get is why he's wearing face paint here. I think this is like the only time that he ever wore face paint.
Yeah, I know. And it doesn't fit with the – because the rest of the team has face paint. Kamala has it. Zodiac has it. Shark has it. You know, so I guess it's just like, yeah, we're going to throw it on you too. This is how you know everybody's tired, right? Look, you have Shark over there choking Macho Man on the floor. At one point, Ming was just choking Macho Luger on the floor. And Kamala was choking Sting on the floor. It's just like, okay, take a breath. We get it, right? That's
a lot going on here.
A lot of you have a lot of big guys in here, right? A lot of super heavyweights. And here comes Hogan.
He's going to start throwing powder in everybody's eyes.
Oh, that's – the Hogan powder is where it's at. There you go. Oh, there's some more powder. Oh, Kamala with the face. The powder in the eye knocked him down on the floor again. Instead of just being like, hey, I'm blind, I can't see, he actually fell on the floor. Oh, Zodiac takes another bump off the powder. And there's Tenta still choking Macho Man on the floor because he needs to take a breath. No powder for Shark, though. Eye rake. This is not a match unless we get Hulk Hogan back scratches.
And you need those Hulk Hogan back scratches.
Oh, wow. Zodiac selling it. Overselling every time those punches. My God, stop. And now he's biting the nose. Oh, powder again. Sting came with the powder. Kamala just got hit twice. Kamala's now face down in the turnbuckle. That sequence just now of Zodiac selling Hogan's punches while he was standing in the middle of the ring.
Kind of ridiculous.
Just stop it. Here's another thing about, let's say Brutus. Has anybody made a living more off of somebody else than Brutus Beefcake has off of Hulk Hogan?
No, probably not. And I think even Bischoff said that Beefcake came with the, like, he was part of the package. Like, Hogan was like, I'll sign with you, but you got
front scratches. Wait a second. Did you see that? Not back scratches. He did the lethal front scratches. There's the back scratches. Now we got a match, guys. Now we got a match. It's not a match. He did front scratches, which I've never seen before in a Hogan match. It just blew me away. And then he did back scratches. Two most lethal moves in the business.
That's funny.
Down the chest and down the back. I'm sorry. Getting back to Brutus. I'm sorry. Those back scratches really do it for me. Oh, and Shark's on the floor again. Back scratches to Kamala. Let's go. That's it. Kamala's going to quit. He had powder in the face twice and a back scratch. It's over. He might as well just quit now. Oh, now he's just digging the boot into Kamala's face. Very limited in terms of moves. A lot of thrown into the cage, a lot of chokes.
Yeah, I guess at a certain point, I mean, the WCW ring was smaller. The cage is obviously smaller. So at a certain point, once all these guys get in there, there's only so much they can do.
Right. I mean, listen, it's meant to be more back scratches. Ming got back scratches now. Now, Shark needs back scratches, and we're good to go.
Ming should not be fazed by those back scratches, though.
No, Ming should look at him and then rip his head off. So it's like, hey, Hogan, like, what stuff do you have to get in the match? Well, I do this thing where I take both my hands and I pretend to scratch your back like it's very lethal. Just get that in the match, all right? If anything, big boot, leg drop, back scratches. I need to get my shit in. Zodiac at this point is spent. Most of his zebra makeup is coming off. Oh, we got a camel clutch from Hogan onto Zodiac. Could this be
the end? Yeah, that's going to be the end. That's the end of the match.
And there's Randy Patrick. Is that Randy? Randy Anderson, excuse me.
Randy Anderson, yeah.
Yep, that's it. I didn't even see Brutus Beefcake actually submit or Zodiac actually submit. But
he almost fell on that camel clutch, too.
Yeah, I mean, he was in the match all of, what, 4 minutes? So, obviously, guys, once the last person's in the ring, it starts the match beyond. The only way you can win is by submission or... I think the person has to, you know, just verbally submit.
I quit, yeah.
Now the Taskmaster is being redirected back to the ring because now he has 5 minutes in the ring with Hogan. Now here's the thing, too. Taskmaster is supposed to be like this. Who the hell is this guy with his rat tail? A little production assistant or whatever. Anyway, if the Taskmaster is supposed to be like this sinister force, this sinister thing trying to take down Hulkamania, why is he acting like the chicken shit heel right now, trying to run away? Right. If anything, he should be like, all right, you got me 5 minutes. I don't want to do it, but let's do it. Whatever. Or try your best. Right. Like now he's just like avoiding it at all costs. I don't know. And that right there is like makes no sense to me, actually. Now you have some random dude with a ponytail, another guy I don't know.
And so he's also doing a bad job at acting like he doesn't want to go.
Yeah, exactly. He's almost like, wait, hold on. And look, and there's Ming and Zodiac like, yeah, we'll see you later. They literally walked right by him. Didn't try to stop Sting from putting him in the cage at all. They literally walked right by him, and that's supposed to be their leader. So that's storytelling 101 there, folks. And I just realized that Hogan is wearing his yellow tights underneath his camo pants.
Kevin Sullivan's a wrestler, too. Like, he should put up a fight.
He's choking him with the wrong end of the shirt. Oh, he's going to throw him in the cage. There it is. And thrown in the cage. I need a back scratch on Kevin Sullivan to make this night complete. All right. If I don't get that back scratch, this match is going straight to hell. Guys, tell me where the logic is here that two of the members of the Dungeon of Doom walked right past Sting trying to put Kevin Sullivan in the cage, and that's supposed to be their leader. And they walked right past him. And they're still in the stable at the end of this.
Yeah, they weren't kicked out for that,
right? You know, they're just like, oh, you Sting, you got this, all right, we'll see you later, good match. And the camera picked that up too, which is also awful. I mean, Haku and Brutus couldn't just wait until they threw him in the cage for him to escape. And at this point, Luger's also gone. Sting's gone now. Jimmy Hart's still there. Everybody's gone except for him and Kevin Sullivan, him being Hogan pronouns. Sorry about that.
Right? And they never did the whole Dungeon of Doom versus Hulk Hogan thing was really about Kevin Sullivan, but they never did a real blow off with them.
I wonder why they never did a one-on-one, straight one-on-one Sullivan versus, but I think at this point, because they wanted to do the Giant, who you'll see now, oh man, he's choking him with the athletic tape. And again, choking him the wrong way, but that's fine. And now he's going to do it like he did with the shirt. Oh, big boot. There comes the Giant. Dan, look at him there, man. So young. He is built too. He's early, skinny.
Early 20s.
Skinny can be. Right? Isn't he what? Isn't he like 21 here? 22?
Yeah, but very early 20s.
Randy Anderson right there. Let's see if we can get some audio on this last little part here. Hold on.
Oh my goodness.
Oh wow, he grabbed the roof and jumped over the top rope. That's innovative. Jumped over the top rope. And again.
I love when he picks up Randy Anderson and Randy Anderson yells. He's like, oh. Look at the agility is crazy with him.
He was so agile for his size, man. No selling the punches. Back to the choking. I mean, I know he's very green here, but the simple choking, you're a monster. Punch me in the face. And Kevin Sullivan stands in the corner, not even attempting to it. Oh, here we go. Here's the next snap.
Whiskey.
No punching him in the face, like a bottle of cheap whiskey out of his body, man. Rest in peace. And here comes the Hulkamaniacs back.
I can't see from here. I hear somebody coming out. Hogan is laid out.
Another camera angle, right? So you hear, I'm going to put this back down. You hear the crowd screaming for Hogan. He gets fake neck snapped rather than like getting punched in the face or something like that to make it look more devastating, right? Because clearly he's not breaking Hulk Hogan's neck here, right? He's not snapping his neck because Hogan can still move all his extremities, right? And then you hear the crowd cheering. Why would you not cut to the team running back out? Even Bobby Heenan says, I can't see it from here, but I think somebody's coming out. That's terrible. Why not cut so you can see who's coming outside at this point? You hear the crowd cheering, so somebody's obviously coming. Instead, you're focusing on Hogan like convulsing on the ground a little bit. And here's Jimmy Hart with his red and white and blue hot pants. Now they're calling in the medic, who has a gigantic towel on his belt.
After all that, I mean, Team Hulk Hogan, Hulkamaniacs, Hogan, Sting, Luger, Savage, they actually do get the win in this match. But the bigger story is the debut of the Giant, aka the Big Show, and what would lead to a big rivalry between Hogan and him.
So and have Hogan losing the belt, well, you know, kind of losing the belt, having that big monster truck where Hogan literally murdered the Giant, dropped him off a roof. Yet somehow the Giant showed up later and beat him in the ring. So, you know, good times. Good times had by all.
So where does that one, now that we've watched that, that was the first time I've watched that in a long time.
Very, very much so. Yes, it does for me too. It was for me too, not it does for me too. That might be... No, that doesn't take the cake. Because if you really want to get technical, the Fall Brawl from 98 was crap. Not 98. Am I right with 98?
Yeah, 98.
With the three teams?
Yeah.
That was not good. NWO, Hollywood, then it was NWO Wolfpack, and then the WCW contingent, and then the Ultimate Warrior by himself. You know, and famously, too, those trap doors that they put in for Ultimate Warrior almost ended British Bulldog's career because
he broke his back on it, yeah.
Right? I mean, pretty bad. And we have here, as we navigate, we're going to go to 96, right?
Yep.
September 5th, 1996. Let's do that.
I got a little bit of an ad here.
Yeah, I'm gonna skip ahead. I'm gonna use these lovely tabs. What I love is this promo here, Decision Time by the Four Horsemen. They ask, who's going to be the fourth member? They ask, is it going to be is it going to be Chris Benoit? Is it going to be Mongo McMichael? And they just went with the three, which I don't understand. And then Sting confronts them and says that it wasn't him. But what they do great about the promo beforehand is that they don't show Sting's face. It's just Sting's back. So when the fake comes out later on, you don't know if it's actually him. It's actually really well done in this case. All right, so if we're going to skip ahead, hold on for a second. Let me
So if you guys are watching along with us, let us know what you thought about Fall Brawl 1995, or at least the War Games match from there, the Hulkamaniacs against the Dungeon of Doom. Let us know where Dungeon of Doom ranks on your list of all-time bad gimmicks. I'm sure if it's not number one, it's close to it. You can do that at WrestlingGuysPC on our Twitter.
You know, I might be right to censor.
You didn't like the Right to Censor? I thought to Censor was a good heel gimmick.
It was good for what it was for the time, but they never really put no steam behind it. But Dungeon of Doom might be the worst gimmick that got like a major push in wrestling history.
Yeah, but anyway. You're probably right. I mean, major push, yeah.
So here's the thing here. To set up this, it was usually going to be Team NWO against Team WCW. Prior to this, Lex Luger and Sting confront Arn Anderson and Ric Flair and say, you have a history in War Games. We have history in War Games. Let's go up against the NWO, take them out. This is when the NWO is building up steam. They are red hot right now.
Yeah.
Scott Hall, Kevin Nash, Hollywood Hogan. I think the Giant has joined at this point. Yep. And they're just building their contingent, which will grow to like a million members at one point. I'm exaggerating, but they had a lot. And the whole point was, prior to this Nitro, the Nitro prior, Sting supposedly turned on Lex Luger. Somebody came out of the limo dressed like Sting, makeup like Sting, and they said that it was him. At this point, they say he's in the NWO. They haven't heard from Sting. And like I said, the promo that sets it up prior to the War Games match, you have Sting's back to the camera. He says it wasn't me, and none of them actually believe that it was not him. So they're going with the three men, Luger, Flair, and Anderson, and then they're going to go Hollywood Hogan, Sting, fake Sting, Scott Hall, and Kevin Nash. All right, and that's how we set it up here. We're at 2 hours, 6 minutes, 20 seconds, or you go down to the tab where it says NWO versus Team WCW, War Games match. We'll do it on the count of three again. We'll do 1, 2, 3, and we're playing Fall Brawl 1996 War Games.
A huge year for WCW. I mean, this is when they started winning the war, the Monday Night War with WWF. And it was really all because of the NWO and Hogan going heel. Not the first time Hogan has gone heel in his career, but the first time in a long time. And it was almost unimaginable, Hulk Hogan being a bad guy. But I think for a lot of people, he became more interesting. It was probably a better heel than he ever was a face. What do you prefer, face Hogan or heel Hogan?
I mean, listen, face Hogan was part of my childhood, but Hollywood Hogan at the NWO was the shit. He's one of the best. I mean, to be honest with you, as much criticism you give Hogan about his in-ring work and likewise whatever, he's arguably one of the greatest faces, or the greatest face of all time, and arguably one of the greatest heels, or the greatest heel of all time. I mean, you know, there's an argument to be made for both. And I mean, when he went heel, he needed it. The crowd was starting to turn on him, and he embraced it. Let's make money with this. Let's do it. And I can't blame him for that. That's great. I mean, and he revitalized his career.
Absolutely.
Right. This is, at this moment, 96, they're just starting. The Monday Night War is picking up. They're just starting to win in the ratings, and they're going to go on to have a huge 1997. I mean, you know, a 96, 97 would be huge for them. You know, then WWE, 97, they start with their Attitude Era. I mean, this is right here is peak.
Yeah, peak wrestling right here.
WWE and WWE, right? Monday nights were must-see TV. I used to watch Raw live and tape Nitro on videotape on a VCR and then watch it back either that same night or the next day after school. I mean, that you had to watch it, and you didn't, if you watched it on a Tuesday, like I used to do, you didn't want to hear people talk about what happened on Nitro. So sometimes, most of the time, I would just end up staying up late to watch both shows because you didn't want to be the guy who didn't watch and saw what happened the night, right. The night before when you went into school the next day. It's like, oh, you saw what happened on Nitro? Nah, I got to watch it tonight. Oh, fuck you. It's like, nah. And then people would just spoil it for you.
Yeah, Michael Buffer making the longest intro in history. I mean, is he the most overpaid person in the history of the world? I mean, he's got to be.
This guy made money off his voice. Let's Get Ready to Rumble is trademarked by him, which is crazy.
I mean, kudos to him, but if you think about it, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, it's like, oh, we got to bring in a big-time announcer. Yo, Michael Buffer is where it's at. I mean, boxing, wrestling. I mean, I did like Michael Buffer being for the WCW main events because it always added a sense of, like, a big fight feel. Like, Michael Buffer's here. Oh, damn. You know, like, it made it important, you know? Him being Morgan, this is, I want to say, the NWO, not Hogan's first major match, NWO's first big match together as a heel faction contingent against the Team WCW people. And to have Michael Buffer here, it's like it makes it important, you know?
No, that's definitely true. Every time Michael Buffer announced the match, you knew that it was a big fight.
And it gives it that here.
Is he still alive?
You know, I'm going to say yes.
I feel like he is.
I'm going to my...
I mean, it would have been news if he passed away.
I'm going to go to my lovely Google here.
I think it would be cool if we're seeing...
76.
He's 76. We mentioned before that NXT is bringing back all these old WCW things. I think it would be cool if they brought back Michael Buffer for like a one-time announcement thing.
I will tell you that when Randy Orton and Edge did the greatest show ever, the match, and they had Howard Finkel do the announcement, the old school. And I love, first of all, that almost shed a tear. That was a great moment because he had just passed. But what NXT is doing when they bring down the old school microphone that they used to have for MSG that Fink used to announce with, I do like that touch. And if they had a major announcer like that, yeah, I think that'd be great. Here's first person off NWO, Scott Hall.
Ted DiBiase.
You know, I hate that Ted DiBiase didn't work out with the NWO initially because he was supposed to be like their heel financier. He was financing the NWO. Here's the man right here, Double A, the Enforcer, Arn Anderson, most underrated WCW wrestler in history. He is in my top five top WCW wrestlers of all time. I absolutely love Double A.
Yeah, I mean, Double A is nobody has a better spine buster. And,
yeah, he's probably 34 here, and he looks like he's 58.
I think he was born 58, honestly.
I know. He just looks like he was born in his 50s.
But he was great. He was definitely great.
Best spine bust in the business, hands down. Great DDT on top of that also. And you know what? Scott Hall, when he was with it, and he wasn't, you know, battling the substance abuse issues.
Great, too.
Awesome. Awesome in the ring. The fact that they're both starting it off together, I love. I love that the Arn Anderson, Scott Hall, which is great.
And this is when Arn was almost close to retirement because of his neck injuries.
Yeah, he's almost on his way out here. Unfortunately, his injuries are catching up to him. He throws a toothpick, he's goading him in. I mean, what was great about these angles at the time is that what WCW did is blurred the lines of realism, right? They didn't come in calling him Razor Ramon, which they couldn't legally, right? Scott Hall coming in from the crowd, thinking that he's invading from WWE, doing the hey yo, wearing the toothpick like he was Razor Ramon. Didn't mention it though. You know who I am, but you don't know why I'm here. You know, that was great.
Yeah, that was a great line too. Like his entrance coming through the crowd is so iconic in wrestling.
I love the attire here too. The outsiders with the blood dripping down the pads, and his elbow pads also. Damian Priest, who's a big time Scott Hall guy, did that at a takeover. His vest looks similar to Scott Hall's, like an homage to Scott Hall.
And I'm a big Damian Priest fan too. I really like Damian
Priest. Absolutely, I'm a big fan as well. He does remind me sort of a modern day Scott Hall, just because of the size and the look. Not so much the work on the mic, which I think he can maybe improve on, but I think he's great.
See, now even this one, you can tell that the, unless it's just me, but it does, the cage does look a little taller here.
It does. And also it looks
not like much though.
It looks like it's reinforced. There's three metal bars in the middle, so it doesn't have that
sagging
sinking in. In the previous match that we just saw too, in 95, I don't know if you noticed, it looked like there was like some type of plastic piece that was like weighing down the roof too. It was like a black, I don't know how to describe it, but I'll put a picture of it online or something somebody can see, but it's on the roof. He was actually weighing it down also. But yeah, it looks like they did raise the level of this cage as opposed to previous years. Why do you think it didn't work out with Ted DiBiase in the NWO? Because he's not with them too far along after this. He ends up managing the Steiner brothers. Was it because of Eric Bischoff joining the NWO?
Yeah, I think so. I think when it was revealed that Eric Bischoff was the mastermind, it just took away from DiBiase's presence in the group.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, doing my check here, there is only three people that are dead on this card.
Let's see if I can remember. Benoit.
Yeah. Oh, I'm lying. Wait a minute. Let me double check. I see one, two, three, four. I was wrong. It's not three, it's four.
It's got to be Benoit, Randy Savage.
Oh, he's still alive. Okay, scratch that. It's three. I thought he was dead. I thought NWO Sting was dead, but I was wrong. Jeff Farmer.
So Benoit, Randy Savage, and did Guerrero have a match? I don't remember.
He did not.
So then I'm at a loss.
Miss Elizabeth.
Ah, yeah.
Oh, and is Nancy Benoit? Did she come out with them too? Because if not, then that would be number four.
Yeah, that's
the two valets, two wrestlers in this case. Unfortunately, no longer with us. The enforcer right now, having him in a sleeper hold. Don't know what it does. I mean, you're wearing the person down so he gets tired for later on in the match, right? But you can't win yet. You have to wait for the whole team to come in. At this point, there should be more of a brawl. I mean, I get it. You're trying to, you know, you have, what, 5 minutes for the first period. So you want to kind of, you know, take some time off this clock without having to do it, right?
Now, for those of us, for those of you watching along, you know, who haven't seen this match, we gave you the backstory behind what's going on here.
It's fine, Buster, but he couldn't lift him great because I think he was afraid to hit. See, that's a good wrestler right there, right? He adjusted for the fact that Hall is taller and probably hit his head off the top of the cage. I'm sorry, go ahead there.
But the way that this match is structured is because of the surrounding story with Sting. So it turns into 4-on-3. But why not just have a fourth member and then have Sting come out and just beat up everybody afterwards instead of it being 4-on-3? I don't know, just like in hindsight. And if I was in their position, that's probably what I would have done.
But who would you have taken? Here comes Kevin Nash now out of the gate.
I would have put Savage in there. You know, have Savage be part of the team.
Savage at the time, I think,
he did have a match, yeah.
With
the Giant, right?
I think the whole point of it was Sting turned his back on him, so we don't need nobody else. We'll take him out. And then the NWO was heavily playing up that, oh, Sting is with us. You know, so if you think about it, the NWO technically didn't have a fourth member either. They had the NWO Sting, who gets taken out by the regular Sting in this case, you know?
Yeah.
And this, I mean, this sets up one of the best angles probably in WCW history with the Crow Sting. And then the build to him versus Hogan. Unfortunately, the match ended up being lackluster. But this is one of the best angles that they ever did. Probably the best angle besides the NWO.
I was seeing Kevin Nash. I like Kevin Nash's attire here, too. The all red with the black.
I did, man. The Outsiders were so good.
They were a great tag team. But I got to be honest, I was always a fan of Nash, but I preferred Diesel.
Like, really?
Diesel was my guy.
I liked Nash WCW version a lot better than I like Big Daddy Kofi.
Classic Kevin Nash.
I actually think I prefer a bit Scott Hall over Razor Ramon, just because the Razor, you know, he dropped the gimmick, he dropped the accent. It was just, I'm Scott Hall, I'm an ass kicker.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still that cool, cocky heel also. But, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I enjoy Razor. But when you're comparing the two, I think I prefer Scott Hall NWO and Kevin Nash as well. Two just tall guys too, man.
Yeah, Scott Hall is deceptively tall. Luger. You don't realize how tall he is. He is Luger now.
Luger, not, it looks like no sense of urgency to get down to the ring. He's literally jogging gingerly to the ring. He's a double clothesline, Luger special, with the little, yeah, to the crowd. All right, here in the cage, a couple throws in the cage each, right? But there's no sense of urgency. Now, if you're part of the Team WCW and Arn Anderson's getting his ass kicked by the Outsiders, you would be running to that ring as soon as you can to get in because it's your time. And he's just like, yeah, I'll get there when I get there. And I think that's the problem that people have with Luger to begin with, you know?
Yeah, laziness.
I think what you said was great. He made a career off potential. That's a great way to put it, honestly. You know, another flying forearm this time. Here comes another flying forearm. You know, at this point, too, though, they're not really acknowledging the fact that Luger has the plate in his forearm as they did in WWE. Now it's just he's hitting him with the forearm.
Is that real, though? Does he really have a plate in his arm?
He did get into a motorcycle accident. I know that. Does he have the plate in his arm? I believe so. Because if you actually look on his forearm, he does have that scar.
Yeah. I always thought that was a gimmick.
I'm going to get into his medical history here.
Got another minute remaining until the NWO gets another guy out. Now, the only thing, if I had one complaint about War Games, it would be that, you know, when they do the coin toss to see who gets the one-man advantage, it always favored the heels. And I think only up until the very recent one, the NXT one, where it favored the good guys. But it loses a lot of the, I guess, predictability, because you always knew that the heels were going to have that advantage.
But it also builds heat on the heels too, right? I mean, they have
to. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, but if you think about it too, if you look at the previous in the NXT versions, right? I think the last two or three years they've done the ladder matches to see who's going to be in the wow. So here comes Hollywood Hogan coming into the ring, the opposite side of the cage, which again makes no sense. But in this time, you know, with the exception of Shotzi winning it, I think she was the first face to win it to get an advantage for the team. Other than that, it's always been the heel. Now, yeah. Undisputed Era, I think, have won it 2 years in a row. And then now, since they were the face team, Pete Dunne won it for the heel faction. I was surprised Shotzi Blackheart actually won. You know what I mean? I think it's a good job of building heat. Yeah, is it predictable? Of course, because it's like, yeah, the heels always win the coin toss first, but they always win the advantage. But it's good at building heat, because if you have those sympathetic guys who are getting beat up, I mean, even last year with Rhea Ripley and Candice LeRae, it's the only two members of the team in the ring with all four members of Baszler's team. You know, it builds that sympathy. So when they come back, the crowd is hot and ready to go, you know? And here's Hogan choking on the floor. Hogan classic. You know what we need? Some back scratches. At this point, if he doesn't do a front scratch, I may be annoyed. I wonder why he chose. I mean, I guess it's the heel thing to do, but to darken the beard on the sides, but still have the Fu Manchu blonde.
It's a cool look, though.
It is. I dug it. I always used to thought they used to take the NWO spray paint and just do it on the spray. No sense to me. But that was, you know, I was a kid, man. You know, what do you want me to say?
I've always said that Hogan, with the bandana on, looks like an intimidating guy. And as soon as it comes off, it's just like, oh, okay.
Like, yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Hey, Dad. Right now we have three members of the NWO, two members of WCW. There's Hogan leg drop. Ooh, right on Anderson. Lex Luger's walking slowly.
About 15 seconds left until
he's doing the foot choke, where it looks so lethal because he's just shaking his head and moving his hair. Here comes Ric Flair, the man dirtiest player in the game, and he'll show you right now why he's the dirtiest player in the game. Smart move on the opposite side for the face, right? Because it's 3-on-1 because both guys, Arn and Lex, are both down. He's saying, come to me, trying to taunt him. Smart move, right? And I think Dusty Rhodes and Bobby Heenan say, yeah, smart move. Make him come to you. Here comes Hogan. Why did I feel like this match was longer?
It did. I thought it was longer. It feels short.
Oh, I rake. A couple of punches here. Dirty's playing the way. I'm going to show you how it's done. Nice punch. Closed fist. Why? Because it's War Games. He's not doing no. Oh, going into the tights. Brass knucks. There we go. Smart move. Ooh, low blow.
Low blow.
Again, it's a War Games match, right? Another low blow, right? You could play dirty here. You don't have to be the heroic. You could play dirty. What better way to do it? Do you notice that Ric Flair has like a golf ball sized growth on his back right now? Do you notice that right now?
Yeah.
You
see that? Yeah.
What the hell is that?
Maybe just tissue buildup from. But I don't know. I've noticed that before on him. I've always been like, what the hell is that?
All right. We have the field. Atomic drop all around. Is there anything more lethal than the atomic drop? Who wants to get kneed on the ass or in the balls? So now DiBiase's at the entrance ramp. He's waving for somebody to come down, but now he's back with his attention here. So now people are looking to see who it is. Right? He's waving again.
Yes, and even though Flair has Hogan in the figure four, the match can't be stopped.
Right. So
at this point, not everybody's in the ring.
Oh, here comes the fake Sting.
Unbelievable. Do you ever think you'd see this? Did you ever think you'd see this?
So at this point, oh look, see, Nash tried for the powerbomb and Lex Luger's feet hit the roof, and had Nash not adjusted, that could have been dangerous.
It could have
been. Nash actually stopped to readjust to pick him up and drop him. So good on Nash's part to do that. He looks, not for nothing, he looks just like Sting.
He does, and I think he was actually a big star in Japan.
Yeah, he was. He actually goes back to Japan as NWO Sting when they had their faction in Japan over there.
Yeah.
I mean, and he does the chops, he does the punches, he does the Stinger Splash just like Sting. It's actually spot on. I mean, you got to give it to Jeff Farmer for doing that. It's really good. He does the woo to the crowd. That's crazy. It's really good. It's very well done. And here's the thing, too. They don't cut to the camera as of right now into the ring, right? They're doing the outside hard camera onto the cage.
So you can see.
It's out of Sting, but you can't really. But you have the announcer saying that it's Sting, right? See, and then, you see, notice that. A low angle shot here, Sting and Flair. They still don't show Sting's face, right? There's a minute left. Who's going to be the fourth man for Team WCW? You don't know.
I think Sting jumps the. Does he come at when it's the count is over, or does he jump the clock?
I think it's either that or it's after, like a little dramatic. It's like, oh, nobody's coming out, and then Sting comes out.
I'll tell you what, Iverson taking a big beating over there also. Luger laid out.
He's another leg drop, which has killed his back over the years. He's had a number of back surgeries.
And his hips too.
Yeah.
Seconds.
30 seconds. 30 seconds on the clock here. Here's Sting or Farmer in the building doing the Stinger Splash, which it really looks good, you know, for an imitation.
That's going to do it for Ruger.
15 seconds remain. He's Stinger Splashing everybody.
One for Flair.
Seven. Here we go, guys. Six. Five. Four.
Oh, the woo is kind of. And here comes the real Sting.
The real Sting to a huge pop. Same outfit, too.
Yeah, that was great.
Same face paint, except the white boots. I guess that's how you're supposed to tell.
And now, they don't show Farmer's face until Sting gets in the ring, and now you know it's not Sting. That was great. That was great production, man. That was great directing, whoever did that.
It was. One of the few things they did well.
Yeah. I mean, this is honestly, but at this point, this is when they were just hitting on all cylinders, man.
Yeah. Clearing house. Slowing down a little bit now, but clearing house.
Here's a Stinger Splash.
There it is, Stinger Splash. Oh, got him both. No question, the elevation.
Sting. So that is Sting.
That is Sting. And there's the real Woo.
You bet. He has taken the NWO to the water truck. He's done it all by himself.
Arn Anderson's the only one throwing punches, and Flair and Luger are looking at Sting in the middle of the ring. What is Luger saying to him? Are you
with us? I think he said. Mm-hmm. And now Sting's just gonna leave him.
He says, "Is that good enough for you?" Right there. I mean, it's great.
Is there a better color commentator than Bobby Heenan? There's the Hogan leg drop again.
I have no back scratches, though, right now. And that's bad. I think he was simultaneously choking and biting him on the floor at the same time. So at this point, NWO Sting got taken out. All the members of the NWO got taken out by Sting. And then he tells them, that good enough for you, screw you, and walks off. And then you'll know, the following Monday, Sting actually comes out and says his piece, which is great when he says, I was at home. I saw NWO Sting. No one believed me. I thought when I saw them in person, I talked to them. They didn't believe me, so screw you. And then followed that up with the only thing is for sure is nothing is for sure. And consider myself a free agent. And then he walks off. That's what starts off the Crow Sting, black and white at first. And then you start seeing him in the rafters for over a year. And
again, this match, yeah.
Is it a Scorpion Deathlock / front face lock on Luger? And does he even... Yeah. Let's see if he even submits.
I think he passes out.
What are the shittiest front face locks? Like, Hogan's not even doing anything.
And Nick Patrick rings the bell. This is when Nick Patrick was part of the NWO, right?
Right. And they're both saying he didn't give up. And then Nick Patrick calls for the bell. Why are there three refs at this point in the ring? Makes no sense.
That's the end of the match. NWO wins it.
Sting. Michael Buffer says, and the fourth team member doesn't say Sting. That's good. You know what, though? Because it's not Sting. It's a smart move. It is. It's a smart move. And now at this point, you have an NWO beatdown after the match. They have one.
Arn Anderson's about to fall in between the rings.
And never mind that he has neck problems, right? We're just going to stomp on him in the middle, in between two rings. And now they're raising the cage. This is okay. I hate this moment right here. With Luger crawling to the back, yelling out Sting, it's just so bad. That's Luger for you, though, no?
Yeah.
Stinger. You can't. You just went through hell, but you can't walk because you got a simultaneous Scorpion Deathlock and front face lock. I mean, the crowd's hot for Sting, though, right? We want Sting. All right, they saw what happened. I mean, this was a good build-up. This was a good story going into the match. And I'll call this match bad because there was no Hogan back scratches. Oh, there's Arn and Flair getting back
in. Still goes on. And we're going to see Savage come out.
All right, Savage does come out and help them out.
Oh, low blow again to Nash.
Nash is completely, he's just doubled over on the low blow, and now he'll get up and just walk.
This Savage out of nowhere.
Savage came from the crowd, I think. What the hell was that? Here's the thing, though, too. You just came out of nowhere like a ninja to get to Hogan, right? You throw him in the ring, and now you're pandering to the crowd. Right, that to me, it takes you out of the moment. Like, Hogan begging for mercy, good. But Macho Man right now should be all over him, punching him in the face, just giving him the business until the Giant comes in right now. You get what I'm saying? Yeah. He's panning the crowd. Now you're like, now you know he's waiting for somebody to come. That would bother him. It takes you out of the moment. You know something's going to happen. He didn't even lay a finger on Hogan to drop that whole exchange. He literally just put his arms in the air, pandering to the crowd.
Here comes the choke slam.
The Giant has a mega wedgie right now. Good chokeslam here, though. I love that he used to fall with him.
Yeah, just like driving like into the ring.
Knees, like driving him down. And what I loved about the NWO in these moments, too, when the crowd, you should just throw random garbage into the ring.
Oh, my God. They got hit with so much stuff. It's kind of
I remember there was a Nitro where Bischoff was walking. Oh, here's Miss Elizabeth. Still a hottie in 96.
Yeah, she was a beautiful woman for sure. She got better looking as she got older, to be honest.
It's like a fine line. How you doing? She's begging for a macho, you know, ex-husband. At the time, she is with Ric Flair. She had turned on him at the time while Macho Man was the world champion. Ric Flair lose the world title. They didn't give a damn. It was all about the spray paint. Right? They're going to spray paint her like a savage. Oh, man, he's savage.
At this time, these are the only members of the NWO, I believe, right? Just them four?
No, isn't six. So six didn't get here yet?
No, you know, he was there, I think.
DiBiase fit well with the contingent, man. I mean, and he had the promo skills to cut excellent promos for the entire group, you know? And then once Chris got in there, they were just like, I mean, if you ask Ted DiBiase, he'll say it's because Bischoff joined, so now there was no need for him. So Bischoff's kind of like, no, I'm going to take your spot instead. And other people were just saying that just wasn't a good fit.
It's good for a mouthpiece, but Hogan was also such a good promo.
Yeah.
But did you see when the Giant was barking at Miss Elizabeth? What was that?
No, I did not see that, actually.
Two losers! These two lowlifes!
At this point, the match is over. It's been over. They're just standing over Savage. And this was a common theme in WCW pay-per-views in 96 and 97, where the main event would be over. They would do these long, like, post-match segments that some of them would go on for, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah, it'd be like a beatdown slash promo. Somebody gets frame painted. They do the yellow streak on the back. They literally spit on Miss Elizabeth, by the way. I just want to put that out there. Then the crowd starts on Rowdy. Here's the problem, too. Luger couldn't walk, apparently, right? So I'm assuming he's still crawling in the back asking for Stinger. Where's Ric Flair and Arn Anderson? That Macho Man came out for something. He's currently getting his ass beat. Miss Elizabeth came out, and the other two guys are just chilling in the back. Again, doesn't fit with the narrative, right? You just had a War Games match. Flair and Arn should be running back in the ring, only to get taken out by the NWO again to actually set up why they're not there. You get what I'm saying? Like this, at this point, it's like, oh, Savage got Hogan. We walk to the back to take a breather. It's almost the equivalent of, hey, Sullivan, you got this? Me and Zodiac are going to walk to the back. Sting got you, though. He's going to throw you in the ring for you. Not as bad as that one. I'm exaggerating, but still, you get what I'm saying.
Look, there's is that a battery in the ring? Somebody threw a battery, a D battery.
Yeah.
There's a nip right there, an alcohol nip. So many things were thrown at them.
And now they're just posing for the thing. I mean, and we're like, now we're at the end of the pay per view here, right? There is about 7 minutes or so left, maybe. Let's say. And they're just posing for cameras. I mean, you could cut the pay-per-view off at this point, right? But, I mean, at this point, when you have something red hot like this, I guess you're just like, we're just going to rock it till the wheels fall off here.
And they certainly did. They rode NWO until there was nothing left.
So now they're going to do NWO on his back. They did it on Elizabeth. Nick Patrick is literally holding her down. If this was today's game, it just would not be happening. It's actually Randy Anderson. And Nick Patrick's just walking around staring at him.
I wonder how hard it is to get spray paint to come off of you.
I don't think it's terribly hard. You! I think I'm Michelangelo. Maybe it's DaVinci. Probably the greatest artist in the world. Oh, my God. Right now, one more time, big man. Whether you like it or you don't, it's the best thing going today. Hey, look. That was gross.
Yeah, nasty. It spit right in the camera.
Like, hey, thank you for that movie contract, dude. They're still in
their receptions. Another choke slam? And they're all going to slam him down together.
No, Nash walked away before he actually slammed him down. I like how Randy Anderson is actually like, he's like the hero. He's like the low-key hero of this match.
Oh, not because
where's Ric Flair and Arn Anderson?
Where's anybody?
Right. It's supposed to be WCW versus NWO, and there's one guy.
But this, I mean, this is classic WCW stuff, and this pay-per-view was one of the biggest ones that they did at this point in time, you know, with the whole NWO angle. And
oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about, like I said before, right? This is like their first major match as a group, you know, and they had to go. They had to take over.
Yep.
Right. Had this strong group that's saying they're going to take over, and you can't have the faces magically win. And I know that would end up being a problem for the NWO, especially I know Flair was very critical because they said that they didn't put over anybody, and all they did was win. So what did they do? They didn't help any of the faces get over. They didn't help anybody out. But at the time, right now, they had to. You had to establish them as a powerhouse team or faction. You know, you had to establish that. Then maybe they are taking over at this point. You know, it makes sense. Had they lost the War Games matches, like, so why do we care about the NWO now at this point?
Yeah, you had to. Maybe it went on a little too long, but I think the point was that they were this unstoppable force for so long, and it was who was going to be the guy that was going to bring them down, and it was supposed to be Sting. But you know, that whole match between him and Hogan at Starrcade kind of fell apart, and that's probably something we can visit in the future. But
they actually do a very good breakdown of it on 83 Weeks. I think if we did it too, get a little fans perspective, a little background on that as well. But I mean, Sting was just not in the right place personally, professionally, mentally for that match, and unfortunately, a year of buildup ends up going to waste.
Yeah, there's the whole, you know, Hogan tried to screw him over to do the, you know, right, the slow count, and Eric Bischoff saying that they thought about having Sting lose because he wasn't tan.
Right, he didn't have a spray tan and stuff like that. Stupid. But at the same time, too, they blew it. They botched it. It wasn't. It was a regular count. So then when Bret Hart comes out, it doesn't work. It was just bad all around, man. And here you have the NWO again posing. Now Ted DiBiase is now cutting.
DiBiase just got hit in the head with something.
It's cups. Oh, they just got sprayed with beer. I mean, I do recall a Nitro or maybe a pay-per-view where Eric Bischoff is walking down the aisle and a fan just full-on hits him with either a soda or a beer right in the face.
I remember that.
Chris Savage now being carried to the back by the trainer and Miss Elizabeth, and still no sign from any other WCW member on the roster. That's a problem there. You know, WCW versus NWO, you just had three other guys in a War Games match that are nowhere to be found now, right? And they were just fighting up until the point that Savage came and got Hogan. He wasn't even in the match. And the other guys are like, yeah, I'm going to go take a shower. And that's how you end. I never knew why WCW chose to do the credits at the end of their pay-per-view. I mean, you know, you want to give credit when credit's due here, I guess. But
well, that's on Bruce Pritchard's podcast, Conrad actually asked him about why WWE never did credits, which actually they did, but very, very early on. And Eric Bischoff's kind of thing about doing credits was that it's a show and there's a whole production team behind it. So roll credits on it. But Vince McMahon was never just a fan of doing that.
Right.
I want to rewind just a little bit to when they are taking over the announce table here and the Big Show or the Giant is posing. The bulge in his pants is ridiculous.
Yeah, are we talking about the Giant here? I mean, well, he is a giant. Do you think it's a codpiece? Oh, I see what you. Okay, thank you for making me look at that. That's fantastic.
It's just funny.
In addition to his mega wedgie, he has the mega bulge.
Winston-Salem, by God, that we've proven that we're the best there is. You know, we made some demands. But we won.
Yes, DiBiase literally got hit in the head with a cup. That's exactly what happened.
No more outsiders. The NWO. For life.
They got sprayed with, looks like a drink.
But this card here for Fall Brawl 96, it's not as strong as I remember it being. I mean, DDP versus Chavo Guerrero started it. Yeah, Scott Norton versus Ice Train.
Yuck. And it's a submission match on top of that.
Yeah. Juventud Guerrero versus Conan.
Chris that's Jericho. Actually
that's a good match.
That's a decent match. Benoit and Jericho are going to give you money.
That's a good match. Super Callum, Rey Mysterio. Nasty Boys, Harlem Heat. Macho Man, the Giant. So, I mean, it's a on paper, it's not a bad card. But I remember it being a little stronger.
Right. And then you would have, I think after this would be Halloween Havoc 96, and that would be Macho Man.
And Hogan. And that's right. When Piper came back to WCW.
Say that again?
Piper came back that night to WCW.
Right, that's right. Wow, so they really were breaking out all the stops here. Unbelievable. I mean, that's where you would have the Dynamite opener of Malenko versus Mysterio. That was great.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Jarrett's on this card as well. My God.
So there you go. War Games from Fall Brawl 1996. One of the more memorable ones in WCW history. Let us know what you guys think as you watched along with us of that particular match, the whole NWO versus WCW storyline, the Sting and fake Sting. We've watched two. Where does this one rank of all-time War Games matches for you?
It's up there. Probably it might be five if I had to rank it top five. I think the production is top notch. I think the directing is great because promo beforehand not showing his face. When he comes out, right, you see that brief glimpse when he's walking in, and then you know they do the hard camera shots and they don't show his face up until the actual Sting gets in the ring. And then you realize when they show you a face to face. And you realize, okay, well, that's not actually Sting. I mean, I think they did a great job in doing that. I thought the match itself was actually pretty good. I mean, you know, the people that you have in the ring, some not the best workers, but, you know, they made the best of it. You had two really, really great wrestlers in Flair and Arn Anderson and some halfway decent role. Hall, very good worker. Nash, a good worker. You know, Hogan, when he wants to, could be a good worker. And then you had Lex Luger. sorry, Lex. Let's call it how it is. The post-match beatdown of Savage, I thought was unnecessary, especially given the fact like, we were doing a ton in cheek here, right? But, you know, Anderson and Flair were very much upright battling the NWO. And then all of a sudden they turned their attention to Savage in the ring with Hogan and these guys disappeared. It makes no sense. But then you force Elizabeth out there to pretty much get abused by the guys of the NWO and Flair, who she's with at the time, doesn't come out for the save. Neither is Arn Anderson, who's in the stable. And Lex Luger, at this point, I'm pretty sure, is still crawling to Sting. You know, so I think that in terms of the storytelling, that's where it fell for me a bit. The match all the way to the ending was really, really good up until that post-match beatdown of Savage. I think it didn't need it because I think it took away from the story.
And it went on a little too long.
Right. And like I said, too, you know, pandering to the crowd and doesn't even get his hands on him. Like, you know, like it was wait. And you're waiting for the person to come and hit him in the back. That's the problem. You know, it's not the, oh, he has his hands on him. He lands maybe two or three punches and then the Giant pulls him off. It's good, though. I mean, I feel like I'm complaining way too much about it. So I do enjoy the match for sure. But it's definitely not the one with the Ultimate Warrior because that one is hot garbage.
Yeah, that one's garbage. But this one for me is top five because of its because it's memorable, you know, and for everything that we said, you know, it's the first big NWO team match and really the start of what became such an awesome time to be a wrestling fan.
I mean, it was like we said before, it was must-see TV at this point. It was Monday night. Whatever you're watching, you're recording the other one so you could watch it. You didn't want, like I said, you didn't want to be that guy who came in and then you missed something on Nitro or Raw and everyone's talking about it the next day, right? I mean, you had to see it, right? You had to make sure either you had two TVs going where you were going or you were flipping back and forth in the channels or like you were doing like I was doing, like recording one, watching the other. It was a good time. It was I mean, I know people say they want the Attitude Era back and stuff like that. I mean, I think you could change the product and make it a better product. You don't have to rehash stuff that we've seen before.
Rehashing never works, and I always kind of debate people who say, oh, you know, we need the Attitude Era again. You don't need the Attitude Era. Reliving thing, as we've seen over and over again, it doesn't work. You know, how many times did they bring back the NWO and it didn't work?
Exactly. So, absolutely. That's a great point to get across, right? I mean, every time they needed to restart WCW when it was faltering towards the end before the sale, it was, let's bring back the NWO. Yeah, didn't work.
Didn't work.
It's just like, stop. You know, when Vince Russo took over, oh, I know what I got to do. Let's bring back the NWO. What original idea did you contribute to that process? You're bringing back a faction that now at this point has been watered down.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants to see it anymore. No one was a fan of it at that point. It's like, yo, it was great while it lasted. Let it die. Even when WWE tried to bring it back, it didn't work then either.
Yeah, it didn't work, yeah.
You know, you just let it live where it is. You know, there's certain factions that could pop up every couple of years, and you're like, oh, damn. The NWO, for whatever reason, was not one of them. They had their time, and when they tried to bring it back over and over again, it just didn't work. You know, you're like, you want to revamp DX, DX comes back, all right, the crowd's all in it. You want to do another reiteration of the Four Horsemen, the crowd is all in it. And for some reason, the NWO was just that faction. It just didn't work in the other incarnations when they tried to bring it back ever. And whether that was poor storytelling or the fans were also just not involved, I don't know, you know, but it just, I don't know, never worked. Yikes. What a day. I mean, let's got ourselves some war games. We're feeling good. Christmas is right around the corner, right?
Yeah. I mean, and
we got New Year's Eve coming up soon. We got some stuff. We got, you know, good little Christmas Day SmackDown to look forward to. What a time to be alive, people.
And we got the next big pay-per-view event for WWE is Royal Rumble, which is my favorite event ever.
Absolutely.
So maybe we can do some Royal Rumble watch-alongs.
Absolutely. Yeah. I am down for some watch-alongs. I do. Okay, so here we go. Before we wrap this up, and we'll wrap it up because we've been talking for a while now, but early prediction, who wins the Royal Rumble this year?
Oh, man. If I had to say right now, I don't know. That's tough. Because if just looking at who holds the belts right now, right? McIntyre's WWE champ, Roman Reigns Universal champ on the other side. It looks like, if you believe the rumors, I mean, we haven't really seen any buildup yet for it, but if you believe the rumors of Roman and The Rock at WrestleMania, I mean, that's, I hope that they do that because it's a logical step. In Roman's storyline.
Well, it's a lot better than Roman Goldberg from what I've been hearing lately, and I don't want that.
Yeah, that
don't want it now.
Because that was supposed to happen, and they want to try to do it again. But that means, at least in my eyes, that means that whoever wins the Royal Rumble would challenge the WWE champ, which would be Drew McIntyre, unless he drops the belt before then.
Right.
If I had to look at the roster right now and pick a guy just out of thin air on who they might be trying to build, I might go Big E.
You know, I was leaning towards that just because it seems like they're elevating and they're getting there, right? But unfortunately, like, he hasn't been in enough prominent position right now where I could say, damn, going into the Rumble, he's almost red hot, as opposed to where Drew McIntyre last year was at this time going into the Rumble, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, my initial, like, and this is no indication, right? Because for all we know, Goldberg could come out in the Rumble and win the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right? Rock on the Rumble and win the thing. I don't think it's happening, but I'm just saying in general. And if I had to go early indication, I have two that I'm going back and forth on. I do like what's going on with Kevin Owens and Roman right now, and I think they could extend it if they really wanted to. I would love to see KO win it. I don't think he will. Mm-hmm. But since you went Big E, I'll do another one. I'm going to say Keith Lee.
That's a bold
prediction. It's a super, super duper long shot. Will it happen? I don't think so. But I do think that they're priming him up for a major run fast. And I see how they're putting him and Sheamus right now. On Monday, it seems like they're going to be going into something soon, a little feud. You want a young up-and-comer? You want to do that? I don't know. It's a shot in the dark, and I'm most likely 90% incorrect, but I'm going to go Keith Lee.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of the Royal Rumble is, and you know, 6 weeks away until the best event of the year. So a lot's going to happen in between that, in between now and the Rumble, in between the Rumble and WrestleMania. So I can't wait to see who comes out in that match, but I also can't wait to revisit some past ones. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, I'm with that. Got a couple of good ones. We got a couple of shitty ones. 95 Royal Rumble, super shitty. And we have some great ones. Why not? I mean, why not? I mean, we visit ones for the past. Can't know where you're going unless you know where you've been. And it's going to be very weird without a crowd there this year. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, it is going to be weird.
But when you have like surprise entrance and stuff like that, I wonder if they're actually going to do that this year. And then you have your Women's Royal Rumble as well. That remains to be seen. I don't know. And that's early Women's Royal Rumble prediction. There you go.
Women's pick.
I know where I'm going right away. I'm going Bianca Belair.
Okay.
Early indication. I feel like she's going to take it all.
Okay. I think as far as the women go, I mean, I wouldn't be upset with Bianca Belair winning at all because I do like her. And I think we need something other than the past predictable ones of like Becky and Charlotte. Asuka won it the first time. I wouldn't mind seeing someone from NXT step up and actually win it, like a Rhea Ripley, or even like a Io Shirai.
Rhea Ripley, dude, that's a long shot, but that's good. I like that one too. That's very believable as well. Mm-hmm. All right, mark it down. Let us know who you got early picks for the Rumble at No Holds Bar PC. I think this is a good spot to wrap it up, call it a night, call it a morning, if you will, getting later. Just make sure when you're looking us up, Wrestling Guys Podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, everywhere you could download a wrestling podcast, we are on there. Please, if you're looking us up, 5-star review, subscribe. Make us a little more prevalent in searches. Big us up if you like what you're seeing. And if you don't like it, let us know so we can tell you to fuck off. But it's fine. Great. I hope you're enjoying what you're saying. I'm just kidding. But, you know, whether you like it or you don't, leaving feedback. We like to hear it. Where can we improve? Where do you want to hear? What topics do you want to hear? What matches do you want to watch? That's what we want to hear. At Wrestling Guys PC, at Twitter, on Twitter, at Twitter, whatever. Who cares? On Twitter, right? Looking at the fans' perspective. Also, the Fans Perspective podcast each and every week. Make sure you're tuning into that as well. Wherever you can find your podcast, you can find both of them. You're with us, you're here. And with that being said, this has been a No Holds Guide. No Holds Guys. What am I doing? Too much war games today. I'm fucking up and I'm botching like WCW over here. But this has been the No Holds. This has been the Wrestling Guys podcast. Came to talk about wrestling, drink some beer. We're just about all out of beer. You have yourselves a Merry Christmas. You stay safe. Wash your hands, wear a mask. Even if you're around family, don't make the mistake. Take
care. Happy holidays. Happy holidays and stay safe.
And a jingle bell clink for you.